Barack does.
Thanks, Charles, for letting me use your gardening supplies. I'll make sure I put it back in the garage. Man, tending to that lawn is a lot of work.
Tell you the truth, Jim, I'm more concerned about keeping this house.
What's going on?
Well, you know, Sarah lost her job 2 months ago, right?
Yeah.
Since we lost that income, the bills have been piling up, and we're so far behind. I don't want to lose the house because of back taxes. I don't know what to do.
I understand. The same thing happened to my sister and her husband when he lost his job. Do you know that the Wayne County Treasurer has plans and programs to help people stay in their homes?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it.
Yeah. Go to www.treasurer.waynecounty.com and see if you qualify.
What's that site again?
www.treasurer.waynecounty.com.
Got it.
The NFL Draft is coming to Detroit, and you can be there for free. Experience the ultimate NFL Fan Fest. Go to NFL.com/draft access. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through the 27th.
Let's do one more quick one. We get
without Project Clean Slate, there is no telling where I would be right now.
It gave him back his life, because once he got the felony, it seemed like life was over.
Being unemployed, being depressed, being a burden. Project Clean Slate helped wipe those things away. I can't say thank you enough. I am now able to work for a reputable airline. Detroit had my back, all because I live in Detroit.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Week That Was. My name is Saeed Khan, and we have people joining us from international locales, as well as local. Speaking of international, we are joined by one of our three esteemed lawyers, Bill Cycli from Morocco. We've also got Steve Fishman and Joel Sklar, apparently still not out of that law firm that they're planning to build in Grosse Pointe, but there may be space in the Rensen, but we'll more on that later. A lot of space. Labor and community activist Barb Engels. We've got the president of BM Consulting and former director of the Wayne County Public Services Department, Beverly Watts. And of course, co-founder of Deadline Detroit, Alan Lengel. A little bit closer to you, Bill, than we are. But I guess in this globalized world, we're no farther than a click of the TV remote away. Over the last week, we have had a series of backs and forths between Iran and Israel. Over the weekend, Iran launched a retaliatory strike as revenge for Israeli bombing of an Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria, with a series of drones and low-range ballistic missiles. There weren't any civilian casualties, it seems. There were some military strikes at Air Force bases in the Negev Desert. And last night, the two most momentous things that happened was a strike on positions in Iran, Iraq, and Syria, ostensibly by Iran. And along with those bombs being dropped, the dropping of a double album by Taylor Swift. But more on that later as well. So it looks like the tensions between Iran and Israel have, at least for the most part, now simply morphed into a war of words and rhetoric, that it seems as though the proportionality of Iran's strikes over the weekend and Israel's yesterday seem to have now created then at least a lowering of tensions that this thing could escalate or exacerbate. Thoughts on what's going on? And Bill, Steve first, and then Bill, I'd like to hear if you, what the vibe is like outside the United States. Steve.
So it reminds me of going in sixth grade to the first dance where the boys and the girls kind of tentatively go up to each other and, well, come on, you want to dance the Runaround Sue, or would you prefer Teenager in Love? It's something that it's so dangerous to think that you said a few drones. I mean, 300 drones and missiles. I mean, it's fortunate, of course, that the Jordanians helped, the Brits helped, the Americans helped. It's fortunate nothing bad happened. Israelis go and do whatever they did, and it's fortunate that nothing bad happened. But I personally, I think this is a very dangerous dance. If you're really going to have a war, have a war. If you want to not have a war, then quit screwing around. And they're playing to portions of each society that I personally don't believe deserve to be played to. And we could get into that more as time goes on. I would just say this. Tom Friedman had an article in the Times yesterday or the day before where he said the only way to Mideast peace, we need three huge changes, none of which are going to occur. You got to get rid of the Khamenei's in Iran. You got to get rid of Netanyahu in Israel. And the third thing was we have to have some legitimate, of which there are tons of legitimate Palestinians who could be the leaders of the authority. And unfortunately, Abbas is only, what, 88, and he and his cronies refuse to do it. I think Friedman's right on the money, and I think the rest of this stuff is so dangerous that it's not run around Sue and teenager in love. And if something goes wrong, who knows where we go? So that's my view on it.
So two things on that, Steve. First of all, there's been a lot of music that's come out since then. Second of all,
yeah, but not good music. Not good music.
Oh, stop. I wasn't in sixth grade.
You know, once upon a time, there was Saturday Night Fever. There was, but I think it's interesting what you said, Steve, because what I found is that a lot of different people were claiming victory for what happened over the weekend and what happened yesterday. Israel was saying it was basically, to borrow from Holy Grail, it was just a flesh wound. The Iranians said this was momentous. The United States said it could have been a lot worse. And last night, we kind of saw the flip of that. We saw the Iranians say, I think somebody in their government said this was lame for Netanyahu, who says, yeah, we stuck it to them. And for the United States, they said, we kept it from being worse. So it looks like, again, shadow boxing really was prevailing. Bill.
Yeah, actually, I will tell you that this part of the story reminds me of what they used to call a Bloomfield Hills fight, Bloomfield Hills High School fight. You know, you take 10 of your buddies out with 10 of his buddies come out, and everybody would dance around, and before a punch got thrown, your buddies were supposed to grab you and his buddies were supposed to grab him. Make sure nothing bad happened. That's what they
what songs were playing in the background, Bill?
Run Around Sue and no.
I thought he was going to say
Rush Story. When you're a jet, anyhow. But you asked for the opinion from here. We were out shopping. It's the holy day here, and so it's not a ton of activities. We were out shopping today and got a chance to talk to some people in the market. They were all very consistent in their view. They thought this was a little sideshow. They wanted to know, why are they letting people starve in Gaza? Why are they killing women and children? That was their big issue. And one of the most interesting things to me was a thing I've heard in the past, but a guy said to me just an hour ago when we were leaving the pottery area. He said, we love American people. We love the American people. Why is your government so bad? And they really make this distinction. I mean, they're so welcoming here to American tourists. They don't get why our government allows what goes on to go on. And I didn't have a very good answer for him.
Great. Alan.
I first of all, last night, I mean, it was interesting. I think basically Iran and Israel both have come to realization they don't really want to go toe-to-toe, even though Israel has the superior equipment. A lot of people would die on both sides, but Israel ultimately would win, and I think Iran knows that. They had last night, I watched on CNN, the foreign minister of Iran was on. He said, if Israel does anything, we're going to come back and, you know, basically annihilate them, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of saber rattling going on. I think both sides are happy not to be in war. In the Gaza, there needs to be a ceasefire, but there are two sides to it. And Bill shakes his head. But look,
Hamas, there's always a but. That's my problem.
Well, here's the thing. Hamas is supposed to say, okay, Israel's agreed, okay, give us 40 hostages. And now they say, well, we don't really have the 40 men, women, whatever. So they say, okay, well, stick in some soldiers. And they go, no, we don't want to do that because the soldiers are worth a lot more. So what I'm saying is that it's not just, I mean, Netanyahu doesn't want peace. Ben-Gvir doesn't want peace. But either does Sinwar. It's a battle. Let me just finish.
Between crazy people.
Yes, it's a battle between crazy people. It's basically Israel is bombing the shit out of people and killing people. And Hamas doesn't have the firepower. So Hamas is fighting on a PR level. And the more that Palestine, you know, the Palestinians get fucked up, the more the PR, the more pressure. So Israel says, we're going to pressure the Palestinians by fighting and fighting and fighting. And Sinwar is like, the more people get killed, we'll finally get Iran in here. We'll finally get everyone in and we'll wipe out Israel. And so there's a ton of people waiting for peace on both sides. And you have crazy people who are in charge. That's my read.
Bill.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. It's a problem. Everybody has a but after we need a ceasefire. Everybody has a but after we talk about releasing the hostages. The fundamental problem is people on both sides don't want this to end. The leaders, some of the leaders on both sides who could end this, don't want it to end for their own political reasons. It's interesting, Alan, that you so quickly say Israel's got the superior army and will prevail. It will, unless the United States decides they're not going to support it. No. Support them. I think that that is the long game from Hamas's side. They if America continues to allow the Israelis to do what they're to allow the government, the Israeli government to do it, Netanyahu's government, to continue to do what they're doing in Gaza, support for Israel is waning. People are getting very tired of this. And once this becomes conditional, once we're no longer providing them with the offensive weapons and only weapons to defend themselves, then I think everything changes. And Steve, I think that that's the long-term game.
Steve, you brought up the point about how is the Jordanians and the British and the Americans that helped out. Is that a good thing long term for Israel as far as the optics? Because in that sense, it would suggest that Israel's military isn't really strong enough to go ahead and repel. And I agree with you; it was 300 drones. I mean, that's not an insignificant amount, but they're slow rolling. I mean, and I wonder if Iran just sort of sent those up there as a way, basically, to signal we're not really going all in. I mean, I wonder, as Bill said, that if it is then a matter of support, how that's going to really affect the equation here.
I think I hate to keep going back and talking about Tom Friedman, but he wrote a column last week. This Abba Ibn, when he was foreign minister, once said that the Arab countries never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. That's probably 50 years ago. Netanyahu is exhibit A for that. And what Friedman wrote and what is absolutely true, I mean, who are we kidding here? If you were able to, they were starting to put together a coalition, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, everybody other than Iran, and Hamas, right? And the Hezbollah in Lebanon. And if he would ever think about the actual state of Israel and people other than himself and his own future, this is precisely what they should do. The Jordanians, how much more obvious can they make it than to help shoot down drones because they happened to fly over Jordanian territory? The Jordanians knew it wasn't going to land in Jordan. They knew that. They're trying to set up a situation, and he stubbornly refuses to take advantage. He's missing the opportunity to have an opportunity to do something. And that's why, at the end of the day, Hamas is what they are. We all know what they are. They're terrorists. Everything you guys have said is true. They don't give a shit about their own people or any other people. But Netanyahu is an educated person. He's the head of the state of Israel. He's not a terrorist. He's not supposed to act like one. And if he wanted to take advantage of this opportunity and tell Ben-Gvir and Smotrich to go screw themselves, and his government would fall and they'd elect a more centrist government, and who knows where we would go from there. But it's all about him. I'm telling you, he's Trump, except that he can lie in two languages other than Trump can only do it in one.
I totally agree with Steve. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal the other day, which I thought was really interesting, is that they were saying that ultimately Iran would like Hamas to take over Jordan so that they can be closer to Israel. And so, I mean, a lot of those countries, Saudi Arabia, which is afraid of Iran, Jordan, which is afraid of Iran, it's not just like, oh, we love Israel. There's a strategic reason for their participation there.
You know, there was actually an interview of a Hamas official who asked, what does Hamas want? And one of the things they said is that we're willing to go ahead and actually dismantle the military aspect of Hamas, keep the political aspect kind of like Sinn Féin, if there is an agreement to have a two-state solution along the 1967 borders, which of course then suggests that Hamas is dropping its charter statement of calling for the extermination of Israel, calling for then the redevelopment of Gaza and moving towards some kind of regional cooperation. That didn't get a whole lot of coverage in the Western media. But it showed a far greater level of pragmatism than not only, I think, what we're sold, but also this Wall Street Journal article about Hamas taking over Jordan. I mean, that there's a lot of problems with Jordan, but it's kind of outlandish. Yeah.
Said, do you remember who it was who
gave that interview? I don't, and I was feverishly looking for it. But I'll try to send you the link.
I was going to say real quick, the Wall Street Journal thing, they were saying that's a long-term goal. They weren't saying it's an immediate thing where, you know, the whole thing's going to spill over to Jordan right now. So that was just somebody.
I do think, you know, I think it's important to remember again, because I think that in terms of American domestic policy, people think Hamas, they think Palestinian. Hamas is not a Palestinian organization. It's an Islamic organization. You know, the Moroccans are interesting people. They're very accepting. There's a large Jewish community here in Fez. There's a Christian section of Fez. They pride themselves on people living together here. And they make a point of saying Hamas does not really represent Islam. Islam is a peaceful people, and they are not. So I do think that's important. I also think that there's an overlay here we ought to talk about, and that's the New York Times memo that came out suggesting that they need to be very careful about using things like genocide. I mean, really, for the New York Times to issue a memo like that, saying we can't use certain words because it might offend Israel, I really found that offensive.
I'm surprised they issued a memo that they thought would still be sacred in this day and time, in this age, where somebody's going to let something out. I'm surprised they wrote something into paper.
Yeah. Bill, I know you're 5 hours ahead of me, but you just took one of my schmucks of the week, but thank you. Barb.
You know, and the hard part about this for me and for somebody here in the Detroit area and somebody on the ground is that this is not the what's happening to the people of Palestine is not going away to the people of Detroit, to the people in the world. This is still going on while we're all talking about this and they're all waving their dicks at each other, if you'll excuse the expression. And here are these children being bombed in their beds and hospitals being blown up. I know that the United States government is working on things that we can't see. I understand how diplomacy works, but it's not working fast enough for people. And one of the things that worries me the most is the rise of anti-Semitism in the area and everywhere in the United States and in England right now. And this is the slippery slope of this behavior. And again, you can take, I think you can take it right back to Netanyahu. You say Hamas doesn't care about the Palestinian people. Does Netanyahu care about the Jews of the world who are really going to start, people are having to like walk together and not be alone in public places. This is terrifying to me. And everybody's at fault and everyone's a victim. And where the fuck do we go from here?
Right. Yes.
I think it was the Jerusalem Post last night wrote that the town that was bombed or that Israel attacked in Iran, there's 1,500 Jews that live there and there's synagogues there. We forget the cross-pollination of Arabs living in Israel. And it's just crazy when you think about it. You know, you go, oh, I was like, holy shit, there's 1,500 Jews there and there's synagogues there in Iran. And the commonality is we just totally miss out. I mean, people just see enemy and it's.
No, I agree totally with Barb, to the average person. And this is going on so long, innocent lives on both sides. You have two people like you described them that you're not going to get anywhere. So, and then everybody views the United States as the big giant, like the leader can do all. I mean, we got to end this. What can be done? Because what you're saying, and I agree with Bill said, you know, it's waning because now, you know, that sympathy, that's sympathetic. And then you see innocent lives and you don't see an end to this. You just don't see an end to this. And something needs to be done.
I think in the rest of the world, we're considered a part of the problem. Yep. We're not considered a piece of the solution anymore.
Right.
I think the biggest problem that I keep hearing when we're in England, when we're in Spain, and I'm hearing it here, is that, you know, America's part of the problem. They're not interested in the solution either. Right. You know, they use words, but they still send all these weapons.
Well, part of that is.
I know Bill's not going to like this when I say this, but look, I am 100% for the U.S. putting pressure. I mean, Netanyahu, he fucked with Obama. He's fucking with Biden, and Biden is finally pushing back. The U.S. needs to put a lot of pressure on Israel, but there needs to be more pressure put on Hamas. There are proposals before Hamas, and Hamas keeps changing. There needs to be a ceasefire immediately, but there needs to be a return of the hostages as well. And Hamas keeps blowing it off. And I think more pressure on Hamas.
You want to put pressure on Hamas?
Yeah.
Have a ceasefire and see how much pressure will be on Hamas to release the hostages. But, oh, no, we're not going to do that because we're not going to have a ceasefire until they release hostages. We're going to destroy Gaza. There is no place to live in Gaza anymore.
I think we're going to destroy it
before we'll have a ceasefire.
I think it hasn't been helpful when Democratic Congressman Steny Hoyer apparently says that Qatar is part of the problem, that they're with Hamas, even though they're negotiating and moderating the ceasefire talks have not been easy. But for an American politician to go ahead and say that. That's out there is really unfortunate. In fact, the Emir of Qatar came out today and said, you know, what else do you want from us, Steve?
For him to say that is ridiculous because Netanyahu knew full well that Qatar was supporting Hamas with the money. He knew full well what was going on there, and he ignored it. He's the cause of October the 7th. Hamas are the terrorists that did it, but his negligence, and that's probably not a strong enough word. He's so busy suppressing everybody in the West Bank. He doesn't have time. And he knew goddamn well that Qatar was giving them all kind of money. Did he seriously think a group of terrorists were using it to help little children? Of course they weren't. They were doing what they did, building tunnels and amassing armaments. So that's a ridiculous statement that all of a sudden Qatar should be criticized for it. They have their own politics and their own way of looking at the world. But it's not like that wasn't known prior to October 7th. That's what's so crazy about Netanyahu's position.
Well, what you're saying, Steve, was echoed by former Prime Minister of Israel Ehud Olmert, who was on Maddie Hassan's new network, saying, "Oh yeah, this is a Netanyahu creation." Well, moving on a little bit because we're also talking about, as Alan said, people living in areas and having to coexist. 12 New Yorkers are going to have to learn how to go ahead and coexist for the next 6 weeks or so in the greatest fishbowl that this country has seen since, I don't know, the Georgia Aquarium opened up. And that, of course, is the Trump hush money trial. Former president of the United States and serial narcoleptic, Donald Trump, has been having a go sitting there and stewing in the New York court, dealing with the case about document fraud and hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. And I believe, Alan, we might have a video or two about
this. We have some supporters outside the courthouse, including Rudy Giuliani's son.
Yeah, I was in Washington, D.C. on January 6th as well. I was with President Trump. I remember him talking about peacefully protesting.
Some people were talking about peaceful protests. Some people also on January 6th were talking about trial by combat.
Let's have trial by combat!
Do you think Donald Trump had sex with Stormy Daniels?
Oh, hell no.
You don't think that happened?
No, he was with Melania. Who the hell?
He's just always been a one-woman man.
Listen, he probably hasn't been, but women have thrown themselves at Trump for the almighty dollar.
Apparently, it was the venue itself that presented the most bias.
Trump cannot get a fair trial in a 90-plus percent Democrat city like New York City.
Where can Trump get a fair trial?
In the Midwest, in Ohio, in Florida.
He's on trial in Florida. He's on trial in Georgia. Will you accept the results of those trials?
No.
I wonder if that. I wonder if that first.
DC is honest.
I wonder if that first lady knit him the scarf. yeah. Wow. So that happened. So from the lawyers, particularly, what do you think about the whole jury impanelment process that's happened so far, and where do we see this going next week?
It's the greatest. I mean, this is the dream. This is the reality of being in a courtroom. Trump's uncomfortable. He's miserable. He's got to sit in that fucking chair all day. It's not fun. And he's losing his fucking mind. My guess, he's got his adult diapers on. He's shitting himself, pissing himself. He's doing all, you know, he's got to be awful to sit around. But this is what we want. He's in a controlled environment that he has very little power of. He's got a good judge who's stern. The world that Trump lives in has now changed. He is not the power. The judges.
He's sleeping. I don't know how he's falling asleep there. But
he fell asleep again.
Yeah, falling asleep. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, I think his supporters, they just digging in deeper and saying this is more piling on. That right now this is here and poor Trump. And like you said, you know, now they're blaming the victim. You know, so it won't lose anything for him. Ones who are supporting him, they're going to dig deeper in and support him even more.
You're going to see how he reacts to it. Go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry. Go.
This is going to be a negative for him. I don't agree with you, Beverly. The 30%, you're right. Those people.
No, I didn't say a positive. I didn't say more votes. I said the existing ones. It's not going to take anything away from him.
But we've been saying on this show for I don't know how long. I certainly know I've been saying it. Joel just said it. What you have to do with somebody like that is put him somewhere where he can't run the show. And that's exactly what's happening here. And I don't think he's going to be falling asleep because, quite frankly, when these witnesses start testifying, remember, forget about Michael Cohen. Even forget about Stephanie Clifford. I think that's Stormy Daniels. Are they going to call her Stormy Daniels? You can go in there as, I don't know, what, Kid Rock? You don't have your real name? Anyway, I think that when you start hearing from David Pecker, for instance, when you start looking at some of these documents, for instance, I don't care what the 30% do. Those people are, as far as I'm concerned, as nuts as the ones you just saw in the clip that Alan showed. But for regular people to start watching what really went on there, and if the prosecution handles it well, which hopefully we'll find out on Monday, Michael Cohen is not the key witness in this thing. Michael Cohen is corroborating all the things that the documents show and that other people say. And what the prosecution needs to do, and I'm sure they will do, because this guy Wineglass seems like he knows what he's doing, they're going to say, look, our case, the defense is going to tell you the whole case rises and falls with Michael Cohen. That's not true. Here's the evidence in the case. Boom, 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 boom. Now, does Michael Cohen help the case? Sure he does, because he corroborates what we already know. That's how you're going to present it. And I believe personally, you never can tell. All of us who've tried cases, you can always have a hung jury. You can get a juror or two, usually one, that isn't listening or already made up their mind, blah, blah, blah. But the overwhelming number of these jurors, it might not be 12 out of 12, but it ain't going to be not guilty. That's for sure. He's going to be convicted or he's going to have a hung jury.
That's why I wish you were there in New York. I wish you were in that courtroom.
Can I just say the anxiety that he's under, the pressure that he is now feeling and he's going to continue to feel, he's going to get more outlandish. He's going to, you know, he's already violating the gag order. Go ahead.
That was the point. I'm glad you brought it up because I meant to say it. This judge, this is now, there's 10 different violations of the gag order, okay? It's clear as hell. Anybody that's ever been in courtrooms like we have, if a person, if a defendant, whatever it is, if a person doesn't comply with orders from the court, you have to keep making them stronger. And there's only one more thing they can do. And they don't have to. I was watching MSNBC. They think they got to put them in a cell. They don't have to put them in a cell. They can tether his butt to a room, to his own apartment. Who cares? And the Secret Service can sit there with him. But that judge on Tuesday, I won't be surprised if he locks him up one way or the other, because everything else hasn't worked. It's not going to work with a guy like this. He never obeys anything. He's a bully and a punk, and you have to put something to his head to keep him from doing what he's doing.
That his lawyers can't control him.
I predict he's going to have either a nervous breakdown or just a meltdown, where he's finally just going to stand up and start screaming, and they're going to. He can't let. He's ADD. He's a narcissist. Yeah. He's going to see people parading like Michael Cohen to the stand, you know, incriminating him. It's going to drive him insane. He can't handle it for. He can handle it for a few days, but not week after week after week. He can't.
What the jurors were saying, like when they were asking in voir dire, and people, they're reading these god awful comments they made about him. He's got to sit there and be quiet. That's killing him. He wants adoration. That's what he lives for, and getting it. And I think it's fucking with the set. It's going to mess with his body. It's just going to be ugly, 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 which I'm hoping for. And I hope he does lose it. I hope he does, which is already taken over, gets greater. And he reveals more of who he is, even though we already know who he is.
But I hope the judge, whenever Trump does something that he violates any order of his, I hope the judge comes back and do something, because that's the perception, is that people think he just, you know, Teflon Don, bounce off.
Well, I think there's some evidence that he's likely to. I think that the fact, Steve's probably tried more cases than Joel and I combined. Mine tend to be very long trials, and so I don't do a thousand of them. But in all my years of practice, I've only been in one trial in which the other side didn't share the next couple witnesses with me a day or so before. I mean, it's just a common courtesy. It's not a rule. There's no statute, and most judges don't issue an order. But, you know, the prosecution said, we're not going to give you our witnesses because Trump will talk about them. The attorney, one of the attorneys for Trump, stood up in court and said, Your Honor, we'll represent to you and guarantee that Mr. Trump won't. And the judge shook his head and said, I don't think you can make that guarantee.
Right, exactly.
And I think that is the singular best piece of evidence that is out there that Steve's right, that it's the 23rd. What is the date of that here? The contempt hearing, the 23rd, yes. I think
it's the 23rd.
Yeah. 23rd. I think that on the 23rd, he is likely to hold Trump in contempt. I don't know that Steve's right that it'll lock him up, but it'll either be he'll confine him or he will begin to fine him. Either one of those will drive Trump crazy. He won't be able to make it to rallies, or he'll fine him.
The fines don't mean shit because he doesn't pay him. The fines, he's got $450 million he's looking at. The only thing you can do with a guy like that is restrict his freedom. And whether it's putting him in a jail cell, which I don't think you need to do. I really don't. You just have to sit him somewhere. And Bill, what you're saying, you talk about he's going crazy now. Can you imagine that asshole sitting around just with the Secret Service people and he can't leave? He can't do anything? I mean,
didn't they bind and gag Bobby Seale in the trial of Chicago 7?
That's right. They did.
Yeah. And by the way,
it also got overturned, by the way.
Yeah, but in the moment it's good optics. But I think
if that happens, because I don't watch TV.
I think the prosecutors are watching the last 10 minutes of A Few Good Men on how to jar Nathan Jessup and see if that takes Trump over the edge. By the way, Steve, just to be fair, David Pecker is not an alias. It's a legal name.
I think we would have had a lot of fun with him if he went to Mumford with us. That's for sure.
All right, Alan.
I was watching it. I do this every few months. I was watching Fox News, and Alan Dershowitz was on. And I have a question for the lawyers. He was saying that in a criminal case, Trump does not have to be there unless the government objects. If the government doesn't object, he could go out and be campaigning. Is that what's the rule on that for a criminal case?
As far as I know, every defendant's got to be there, right. Number one. Number two, who cares what Alan Dershowitz says about anything? Right. I mean, the only difference between him and the girls that used to stand out there on John Iron Erskine is that he's an old white guy. He's a whore. I mean, he's proven himself to be that. He's one of those people who couldn't stand the fact he was getting older. He's not on TV anymore, and so all of a sudden he throws in with this guy. Right. Defendants have to be there, and in fact, I've talked to a number of our federal judges, and everyone said the same thing. No, the defendant's got to be there. If he misbehaves, you can throw him in the back. You can put a hook up a thing so he can hear. The old days, binding and gagging, I don't think they're going to do that. But if he misbehaves during the trial, they can move him out of the room, and they can hook up an audio where you can hear. But I've never heard of anybody that was allowed to leave if you're a criminal defendant. People leave, but you know what happens when they leave? It's called a capience.
But I think he wants to be there because then he could come out and say, see what Biden and his people are doing to me. I mean, it plays right into his branding. Right.
And by the way, Steve, I think they're now on John R. and 7 Mile. They haven't been on John R. and Erskine since Runaround Sue was at the top of the chart.
Hey, Saeed,
he's not going to let this go, Fish.
Let's go to commercials.
Two quick ones.
Without Project Clean Slate, there is no telling where I would be right now.
It gave him back his life, because once he got the felony, it seemed like life was over.
Being unemployed, being depressed, being a burden. Project Clean Slate helped wipe those things away. I can't say thank you enough. I am now able to work for a reputable airline. Detroit had my back, all because I live in Detroit.
The NFL Draft is coming to Detroit, and you can be there for free. Experience the ultimate NFL Fan Fest. Go to NFL.com/draft access. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through the 27th.
Well, keeping on the Detroit theme, we had the announcement this week that General Motors is looking to vacate the Renaissance Center and move into the new Hudson's Building. That's about 5.5 million square feet of office space, which, by the way, will easily accommodate all of the work of Fishman, Sklar, and Cycling.
And our staff.
Okay, by the way, thank you, Eno. Girls have moved to the West Side, 5 and Telegraph. Okay.
Note to self.
Good to know.
Okay. All right. So, what do you think is going to happen to the Rensen and actually that part of the Detroit Riverfront? And what's GM thinking?
But before we go there, Saeed, Alex, a Greek woman, if I can't read her name, asked, I thought, a great question. Does anyone think Trump will sit on the stand? I'd love to hear everybody's opinion. Go ahead, Steve.
So as we've discussed before on this show, it's a good question, Alex. In general, criminal lawyers tend to want to keep their clients off the stand. The big difference in this case between this case and all the rest of the Trump cases, in all the rest of the Trump cases, Trump admits the facts. He just says they're not a crime. Yeah, I hid the stuff, but I had the right to hide it. All the other things that it was a perfect phone call. In this case, so far, and we'll find out on Monday, Alex, when we're going to find out is Monday, because opening statements will let us know what both sides are going to claim. If he's going to dispute these facts, I didn't have sex with Stormy Daniels or Karen McDougal. I didn't XYZ. I didn't blah, 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 blah. There's nobody else that was there that can testify to those things other than him. Michael Cohen, for instance, is going to give his spin on exactly what was going on. You're going to have the check signed by Trump. If Trump wants his story out in this case, he can only do it by him testifying. That's one part of it. The second part, Todd Blanche, from what I understand, has a pretty good background as a lawyer, former AUSA, white-collar criminal defense guy. I think he and the lady that's with him, I think they'll want to strangle themselves if Trump gets on the witness stand. Because as offensive as he's been. And you got to remember in the civil case, the jury trial, he was there offending the shit out of the jury. Look at what the verdict wound up being. And he offended the shit out. He's already offending these people, and he's going to offend them more with his conduct. I don't disagree with you guys when you say he's losing it a bit. He's going to offend them more. If he gets on the witness stand with that judge, who's going to require him to answer what was asked. No, you can't give a speech. Just answer what was asked. If it's a yes or no question, you have to answer yes or no. He's not going to be able to do it, and he'll blow his own case to smithereens. My guess, if I had to bet money, is that the lawyers will prevail, A, and B, ultimately, as I've said 100 times, Trump's a coward. Okay? Mm-hmm. He can get away with murder, but he's able to see here that he can't. And because he's a coward, he's not going to have the balls, the chutzpah, to get up on the witness stand and submit to cross-examination from some little punky-ass prosecutor. That's how he looks at the world. So if I had to bet money, I bet he won't testify. But there's a significant danger to that because he doesn't want to concede any of these facts. If he were smart, if the lawyers could do what they wanted to do, they'd want to get up and say, you know, you're right. He had sex with Stormy Daniels. He had sex with the other one. But all the rest of this stuff had nothing to do with covering it up, blah, 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 whatever they would do it. But right now, I say he doesn't do it. If I had to bet.
I have a really good piece of evidence to support Steve's position. And that is Trump's said he was going to testify. Right. And as we all know, Trump never tells the truth.
And he'll blame his lawyers. And he'll say, I wanted to testify. I was ready to get up on the stand, but my lawyers
wanted to.
The judge would
let me. If he does, Barb, I'm going to call you Barb. If he does.
We'll have a watching party. How's that?
I want time.
I'm actually a little bit more concerned and anxious about the kind of anatomical testimony that may occur from Miss Daniels and Miss Dick McDougall, and possibly Michael Cohen.
That I've had a lot of discussions with some of our judges about exactly that. To what extent is the judge going to allow that kind of what you're calling anatomical testimony? The problem for Trump there again, if he denies that it ever happened, you could, if you wanted to, and I don't think this judge would go too far with it, but a judge could ask Miss Clifford, or I'm sorry, the prosecutor could ask her to describe the sex act. You could ask. I mean, I have no idea what it's different.
Oh, God. Like, that's
but if it's funny looking, I mean, how else would she know that? How else would she know it? If it wasn't for that she'd have
Steve,
sex
for lunch.
Steve, all of a sudden I got this vision of Fargo. Yeah, he was a funny looking one.
was that after Purple Rain? That was after Purple Rain. I never saw that either.
Yeah, yes, because Steve, that Alan, was the other movie from Minnesota. That was the other movie from Minnesota, other than right. Purple Rain. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you, Layla. That's very nice of you to say. So, speaking of phallic objects, let's get back to the Rensen. What do you think is going to happen? Alan.
I think it's interesting. I mean, Dan Gilbert has gotten all these subsidies for this huge building. He needed an anchor. He convinced GM. They're only going to take up 2 floors, I think, over there. Their headquarters was shrinking. I think a lot of people are going out to Warren and stuff like that.
And remote.
And remote. And so I think for Gilbert, it's a win. And the Renaissance Center, I mean, the CVS there, which was like always busy before the pandemic, that closed. The Renaissance Center has been a disaster really from the beginning. GM saved it in 96 when it bought it for pennies on the dollar. And now they're going to give it to Dan Gilbert and say, try to work your magic. Let's figure out something for this really monster of a building that's impossible to navigate through. The shops have been closing. And I think, and my guess is that Dan Gilbert's given GM an amazing deal, if not for free, to say we've got GM as an anchor here. If not, it's a deep discount, which he's done for all those stores up and down Woodward Avenue, like Nike and Lululemon. I'm sure he's giving them either subsidies on their revenues or breaks on the rent. So he knows what he's doing. The problem is, what is going to happen? Can he work a miracle with the Rensen? And that's a big question.
Is there a possibility to raise and build something new?
That's what some people say. They should just knock it down and start over. I mean, until GM at least changed it, made it a little bit more approachable for pedestrians. It's been a horrible building.
Yeah.
It's a fortress.
It's been a wall.
Yeah,
you know, I have to tell you, I'm in this wonderful, they call it a Riad, this small hotel here. It's only about 1,600 years old. And to talk about taking a building like the Renaissance Center, which is what, maybe 40 years now? 40 years old?
76, the first tower opened.
Okay, and to talk about tearing it down, only in America do we come in and tear down things that are that young. It opened not long after I started law school. God, I guess I did know how old it was. And it is terrible to get around. It's just not a very pleasant building. I can't quite figure out what the intent was, but it would be amazing to now tear it down. We did, of course, we've done it with many other places, the Silver Dome,
Hudson's.
I want it. Kudos to Gilbert for calling it the Hudson's Building.
But Bill, you do know if this was in Vegas, you know, it was way past his life.
But you know, the thing is, like, I know people that work for GM that have worked for GM for a long time, and they've been remote. You know, everyone's going remote. Some people are going to have to come back to that, but they're building. So they've announced there's going to be a hotel on the site of the Joe Louis. There is going to be another empty building. There's all these empty buildings in Detroit. Detroit is wealthy in empty buildings, and we don't have the jobs for them, and we don't have workers. I don't know what the long game on this, and even if GM is only taking two floors, this is a major international corporation, and they're only taking two floors of the Hudson's Building. Who's going to fill the rest of it? I mean, this is just crazy.
Right.
Thinking our billionaires love to build things, and I mean, I like it when Dan Gilbert fixes old buildings, but this is crazy. They still have the train station to fill.
That's going to remain vacant, the Renaissance. Nobody wants an office in the Renaissance. It's just going to remain a shell. And the question is, if you could use the water, I think developing the waterfront is always wise. We never really have done that. We have the Riverwalk. We really haven't been great in our urban planning. And I'd love to see the water develop. I think that would attract a lot of people here. It'd be cool for the city. It'd be a great district. That place is a fortress that blocks everything.
Right. The only thing that's good about it is when you go through the lobby and you go all the way through to the back, and then there's that beautiful plaza.
Right.
And that's really cool. They've had concerts there, but the rest of it, it's
right. It's
when I started dating my husband, we would go down and watch them tear down. That's how old it is. It's since I was dating Bob, and we would watch them as they tore that down, and it was so amazing to see that horrible, ugly riverfront. If you guys remember what it looked like when all the empty factories and stuff, and all of a sudden you could see the river, and it's like, whoa. And then they built this big phallic shaped thing that you couldn't navigate. Crazy.
So basically, Barb, what you're saying is that a whole new generation can enjoy the kind of date nights that you did.
It was really magical.
Okay. All right. Awesome. All right. Alan.
I was going to say the train station is going to have an easier time filling up, even though it's not going to be cheap. They're creating sort of a whole laboratory where businesses are going to feed off each other and help each other and stuff. So it's going to be a whole different environment than the Hudson's building.
With the Renaissance, of course, I think because everything is residential. But again, you know, as fast as you're trying to build residential housing down here, how fast, where are the people coming from? Are the people going to move in as fast as we're still unfortunately losing individuals, you know, to other cities and other states? And then again, I would like to see as the riverfront, maybe we kind of knock some of it down. And I agree with one of the other anchor women who said this the other day, maybe a Ferris wheel out there. One thing we do lack is a lot of, you know, restaurants. You go to other cities and you see indoor, outdoor along the riverfront. Maybe we do something like that, make it more accessible and more livable and give us more activity. So I'd hate to see it stay empty and vacant like that for years. Barb is right. I hope they do have a plan. But I think you just can't fill that building with residential. I think it needs to open up a little bit. And again, let's top it off with a Ferris wheel.
But who, you know, first of all, residential, who wants to live in a building like that? I looked at on the riverfront a long time ago. I looked at an apartment there on the 34th floor, and they're sort of fortresses on their own. They're not part of a community. The community is in the building. There's no community around the building.
Right. Let's open it up. Open it up. Make it more usable.
Yeah.
The very especially if we do something about 375, you know, and make that a more accessible walking area.
Right.
There's the ability. I agree with whoever said we don't do a very good job of urban planning in Detroit.
I think what we should do is we should take the quintet of buildings, and we should have each one be specifically themed and make it about the MC5. So,
you know, that's how that band broke up.
Yeah, Alan, pull up Layla's comment again, please. Yeah.
We could rotate. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is we could tear the whole thing down, and we could actually make it a tribute to one of Detroit's native sons. Thank you, Layla. And we could go ahead and have it be the Colossus of Joe, a big statue to Joe Lewis to go along with the fist that he has. And that could be the first of the next seven wonders of the modern world. So I don't know. By the way, Detroit Public Television is moving back downtown from Wixom. So that's kind of a good news item. And just a couple of other things before.
What the hell were they doing in Wixom all that time?
Not being very intellectual, Alan. Yeah. That was the short answer to that question. Yeah.
Well, I think what you have to realize is that Detroit Public TV are actually closet deer hunters, and there was a lot of opportunity out there. But the special election this week has gone ahead and affirmed Michigan's Democratic House majority. Mai Zhang from 17th District, Warren, and also Peter Hertzberg in Wayne and Westland in 25th District. 52, I think, is now the majority, at least for the rest of the year. And it looks like Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel has brought charges against former Speaker Lee Chatfield on corruption charges. So a lot happening also in Lansing. Alan, I think we can go to commercial now.
All right. Let me get back here. Switching back.
Thanks, Charles, for letting me use your gardening supplies. I'll make sure I put it back in the garage. Man, tending to that lawn is a lot of work.
Tell you the truth, Jim, I'm more concerned about keeping this house.
What's going on?
Well, you know, Sarah lost her job 2 months ago, right?
Yeah.
Since we lost that income, the bills have been piling up, and we're so far behind. I don't want to lose the house because of back taxes. I don't know what to do.
I understand. The same thing happened to my sister and her husband when he lost his job. Do you know that the Wayne County Treasurer has plans and programs to help people stay in their homes?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it.
Yeah. Go to www.treasurer.waynecounty.com to see if you qualify.
What's that site again?
www.treasurer.waynecounty.com.
Got it.
All right.
And now...
Downtown Detroit, Robert Wells, Smart of the Week.
All right. There is plenty going on here. Joel, let's start with you tonight.
Thank you. I will start with Ron DeSantis. His edict to put religious clergymen in schools, essentially, to evangelize, is that it?
Evangelize.
Even better than that. Is, you know, it is absurd to me. Again, it's another, it's why I hate Florida. It's a theocratic state. It's a complete, you know, ignoring the First Amendment. There's an establishment clause that we should really hold quite precious. It's the First Amendment, so it kind of means something. And I just think it's why I hate DeSantis and why I hate the state of Florida. It's way to the right. It's becoming a theocratic state. I mean, it has very little to do with logic. It has very little to do with furthering education. It's a political agenda to insert more religion in school. It shouldn't be there at all. And the pastors in the ACLU are the ones who are fighting it. So I think that's...
Joel, once again, masters the understatement that says very little to do with intellect. It has nothing to do with it, Joel.
Right.
Zero.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, so it's Ron DeSantis again, a common, you know, schmuck. Yeah.
All right, Beverly.
Okay, of course, mine is Lee Chatfield. How dare you? I mean, he's my schmuck of the week. I mean, not to mention the misappropriation of funds. Maybe you're buying a little influence, but the charge that he got away with, which is the one I think he's probably a little guilty of, is the sister-in-law and the sexual allegations that were made, yeah. Having even, I think, his brother supporting his wife. That's despicable, and it puts a black eye again on the whole process of any elected official, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. He's totally a schmuck of the week this year.
All right, Steve.
Well, mine, for the reasons I already said, mine is Bibi Netanyahu again. I think this is the third time he's been my schmuck of the week. And I don't have to go into any more detail other than to emphasize again that as crazy as what the Hamasniks did, this guy set the stage for it. That's the thing that drives me the craziest of anything about everything that's gone on since October 7th. And I think it's also, I think Mike Pappas put something up there saying everybody in Israel has been traumatized. That's absolutely true. As you guys know, my sister's been living there for many, many years. But this guy caused it, and he's really the schmuck of the year. But for right now, since it's only a schmuck of the week contest, he's my schmuck.
Give it time, Steve. Give it time. We're almost in December. Barb.
Jesse Waters of Fox.
Oh, yeah.
This guy, so he's making it impossible to be a juror. I mean, these people, Trump people are crazy, right? I mean, they're nuts. And they will go after people for working on elections. They can go after these jurors. He's outing every one of the jurors on their network, on their propaganda machine, one by one. And how do you see this fucking guy? I mean, this is terrifying, you know, for people. They want people to send juries, people to do things. And he set these ducks against them. He should be from the airway, and he is muck of the week.
Let me throw this in there that, you know, the judge did do something about it. After that first lady, the one who had to step down, the judge mm-hmm. implored the press. And I don't know, did he pull this shit again last night? Because I don't watch Fox News.
Yeah.
He did it again. Okay. Because the judge told the press they can't, don't be talking about where people work. And in fact, they shouldn't really be asking them where exactly someone works. You're a lawyer, you're a doctor, you're whatever. And it was all because of that guy. That's a perfect choice for the schmuck.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you.
All right. Bill.
I'm going to go with the standards editor for the New York Times, Susan Westling. Did I get that right? Who wrote the memo instructing the reporters. I mean, every reporter in the country ought to be offended by this one, that they not use certain terms, including right. not using terms like refugee camp. Where do they think these people live? Wash hotels? The spa? Jesus Christ.
The boutique.
It's embarrassing. It really ought to be embarrassing.
Totally.
That memo got out. And anybody who works for the New York Times who realizes that if you put something in a memo, somebody else might see it.
Right.
They should be idiot of the week in addition to schmucking.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill, I think also in the memo was because she didn't want to offend the fructose intolerant, the big word Big Apple can't be used either. So, yeah. So, you know, read the whole memo, damn it, please. All right.
Not the Big Apple.
I'm going to do sort of a twofold. One is the GOP, some of the GOP senators who are whining that they wanted a full blown out impeachment trial for Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary. And then thankfully it was just blown away. But also interestingly, Senator James Lankford, who put together that bill, who complained, he goes on Fox News the other day and is saying Biden's at fault for not addressing the issues. And the host said, wait a minute, it's your party who, you know, rejected the bill. And he goes, well, yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just so shameful. They can't.
Details, details.
Details, details.
That's the little thing.
Oi, oi. Okay, well, since someone mentioned Florida, I guess I'm going to have to as well, Joel. In anticipation of the solar eclipse, and with the belief that the solar eclipse would cause the rapture, a Florida woman goes into a taco stand and gives a tip of $300 on a $40 bill. She then returns the next day and gives the same waitress $777, saying, "You're going to need this because when the rapture comes, I'm out of here, but you won't be." And of course, she then comes back later when the eclipse happened and the rapture didn't, demanding that she have a refund of $1,077. Which was not so. So now not only is she out a grand, but she's going to have to walk the earth for the rest of her life with the rest of us heathens. So that's schmuck number one. The other schmuck is the Emirate of Dubai, which had just a few days ago more rain in one day than it has in 2 years. Flooded the whole place, and their drainage system is worse than I-75 between 696 and 8 Mile. But the suspected culprit of all of this rain was their ill-fated effort to cloud seed. And this was an experiment which went a little bit too far. Imagine putting more than one Mento in a Coca-Cola bottle and imagine what's going to happen. But the other theory is even better. The other theory is less scientific and more spiritual, that the reason why all of this rain came torrentially is because the UAE helped their good friends Israel in thwarting the Iranian attack. So whether you're looking for a climatological or a cosmological explanation, Dubai is still the schmuck of the week. So there you go.
Unbelievable.
There you go. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, for joining us for another show. Thank you for all of you who've been tuning in and really with what your comments and your compliments. Thank you, Steve Fishman. Thank you, Joel Sklar. Thank you, Bill Cykley. Thank you, Barb Ingalls. Thank you, Beverly Watts. And, of course, thank you. And with the last word, Alan Langle.
Drive home safely.
Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Bye. Good. Yeah.